This episode is presented by Neil Kelly. Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Join us every Saturday for a deep discussion about the biggest stories of the week. Go behind the scenes with journalists, political figures, and newsmakers to get a unique look at our city. And also, I want to hear from you, the listener. So please send any questions, critiques, or sponsorship inquiries to my email at hsanders@wweek.com. Thank you so much and enjoy this episode of the Dive Podcast. Welcome back to the Dive Podcast. I'm your host, Hank Sanders. Great to have you in for episode 60 on this February 19th. We've got a great show for you today. We are talking about what could be the biggest story so far of the year, and that is Nick Kristof not being allowed to run for governor. Of course, Nick Kristof, the former New York Times columnist. We are joined by the two people who are at the center of this matter. Our first interview is with the Secretary of State of Oregon, Shamia Fagan, who ruled against Kristof. Her ruling was upheld unanimously by the Oregon Supreme Court this week. Our second interview is with Nick Kristof's lawyer, who wrote this case brief on why he should be allowed to run. So about as inside a scoop as you could possibly hope for. That means no 90-second news flash this week. We got a lot of content to get to. And it's a little bit of a slow news week, so, you know, this is the number one story, so we're bringing you in-depth analysis on this. But of course, before that, a word from our sponsor. Folks, if you're anything like me, then you love saving money. And my next big step is trying to transition my home to solar power. I've been reading about the topic, I've been talking to people in the community, and everybody points to one company in Portland as being a leader in transitioning homes and businesses to solar power. And that is Neil Kelly. Neil Kelly will sit down with you, it's incredible, for 30 minutes and give you a complimentary solar assessment. They can tell you exactly how much money you'll save, what system will work for your house specifically, what's going to be your out-of-pocket costs, how long will it take for your system to pay for itself. All of these things are specific and tailor-made to your home. So your assessment is going to be different than my assessment, is going to be different than another person's assessment. It is a tailor-made service led by Neil Kelly, which is a leading solar company right now in Portland. So please check them out. Visit neilkelly.com/solar to schedule your appointment today for that free assessment on your home or business, or you can call at 503-288-7461. That's 503-288-7461. Now back to the show. All right, so you know the deal. Nick Kristof, the longtime New York Times reporter who decided to stop working at the Times to run for governor of Oregon, has been ruled ineligible to run. He was one of the front runners among the Democrats for the 2022 election, and he was probably the biggest name that Oregon has ever had in this election. There is this thing in the Constitution that prohibits people from running for governor of our state if they cannot prove that they were residents of our state for the 3 years leading up to the election. Secretary of State Shamia Fagan handles these matters, and she said that he did not meet those residency requirements. Kristof appealed, and so then the Oregon Supreme Court heard his case. This week, they sided with Secretary of State Fagan and barred Kristof from running. Secretary Fagan joins the podcast for the second time in her tenure to tell us all about the drama, why she ruled the way she did, and to answer our questions about the conflict. Let's run the tape. Okay, Secretary of State, I want to start here. So I read your brief, I read the other side, and I think that your case is an easier one to make, that resident within means where you spend your time, where you sleep, where you work. But the Constitution is very vague in that I think it's almost impossible to write a 100% conclusion on what it means to be a resident. If I were in your shoes, thank God I'm not. But if I were, I feel like I would be compelled to err on the side of letting more people join the race. I don't want to be the person that limits people from running. Let the appeals process work out. Let the voters decide. Why did you decide that it was important to step in here and make this decision?
Elections officials across the state, Hank, have been applying what's called the domicile standard to every school board race, water board, county commission. That's the standard that's been applied for forever. That's the standard the election division decided here. So it would have been a deviation from normal process to allow Mr. Kristof to run, because the legal issue really was whether you could have more than one residence, whether Mr. Kristof could continue living, voting, having a driver's license, living his primary life in New York while simultaneously serving as governor of Oregon. That was essentially the logical conclusion if you think you can have a dual residence, as he was arguing. We didn't agree with that. We said, no, you can vote in one place, you can have one residence for purposes of election. And as you saw, the Supreme Court unanimously upheld the decision, not only the decision the elections division made, but the process we applied and the legal standard that's applied here. And again, I want to point out, is applied by county, for county commission races, state legislative races, by clerks all over the state hundreds of times a year. So it really was a no change situation. Mr. Kristof's case would have required a real deviation from what the law had been for you know, really as long as clerks have been doing this.
I still do think, like, there are so many things out there. I mean, just take the Second Amendment. It's so vague, and that's why people have been debating it for so long. What does it mean? But there is vagueness. There were calls that were made. There were definitions that were made. And even though I think that the definitions were easier for your side than his side, there were still like conclusions that you had to draw from some of these things. So I still am a little bit, I want to touch back on that, where it's like, you still had to make that call. Why didn't you just say, hey, I don't want to be a part of this, and I just want to err on the side of somebody being able to run?
Well, for two reasons. One, Hank, which is that to do that, I would have had to override the decision of a professional member of my staff who served under, literally since Bill Bradbury, she's been with the agency. She made the call here, and I want to be clear, I stood by her decision, but as is clear from the public record, she's the one that ultimately said, I've reviewed all the information, I believe he should be disqualified. So number one, to do that would have had to take my own personal opinion and override the decision of professional staff. I'm not going to do that. And number two, because it's important that we get it right. Oregonians maybe don't realize that every time you get a ballot in the mail, some hardworking elections official has already gone and verified that every person on there is qualified to serve if they win. Mr. Kristof was the seventh person for governor that the elections division had disqualified in the past year. The other six weren't, you know, well-known and you know, well-funded front runners, and so they didn't get the attention. But I believe we have to apply those rules fairly to everybody. And the reason it's important, Hank, is because if you just say, you know what, let him run, and then nobody challenged it, if he'd gone on and won, he could have still been challenged before he became governor. There's actually a case where this has happened. In the 1930s, a case of Governor Moody in, I believe it was North Dakota or South Dakota. And, you know, the Secretary of State let him run. He won the election, and then it was challenged, and he was not allowed to become governor because he hadn't met that state's five-year residency requirement.
You made two calls in the last couple of weeks, first the Kristof call and then the campaign finance call, and people have said that those calls favor unions and pointed to unions supporting you when you've run, when you ran for Secretary of State. I said this last week in our show that it's a tricky situation, because even if you feel like you made 100% the accurate and right call and the Supreme Court agreed with you unanimously on that first one, you've got to know that that narrative is coming, that you are bought and paid for. You're just helping your donors out. What do you do to give yourself the confidence to stick to those decisions and try to bust that narrative and say that, hey, no, I'm confident in this call?
Yeah, a couple things, Hank, and you're going to get a chance to maybe break some news here, because sometimes we've been giving this information and the media just doesn't seem to report it so far. So first off, the petitioner in this case, Mr. Kafori, is a political donor of mine. So if you go on and look on my CNEs, you'll see donations from Kafori and McDougall. That's Mr. Kafori's law firm, and they've donated many thousands of dollars to me. So in this case, the person who's very upset with my ruling, Mr. Kafori, is a political donor of mine, and he doesn't get special treatment. They didn't follow the law here. No special treatment, even if somebody is a donor. Another great example here is UFCW, right? The United Food and Commercial Workers Union. I support working people. That is my values. And I have many times been endorsed by Oregon's labor unions, including UFCW. But here's the funny thing. They have been on both sides of the two exact decisions that you've described. They had endorsed Mr. Kristof. very unhappy when he was disqualified from the race by a decision that I stood by of our elections division. Literally a month later, UFCW supported the decision that we made to disqualify initiative petitions 43, 44, and 45. Same union within 1 month. And yet somehow people want to only narrow in on how they felt about a particular decision. The reality is what you're actually seeing is the very boring thing, which is that I'm just doing my job. I'm just applying the law. And let's remember, I am a progressive Democrat. I ran as a progressive Democrat. And the two most controversial decisions I've made so far, Hank, have mostly pissed off Democrats and progressives.
A lot of people all around the country are having more remote work than ever after the pandemic. So what it means to be a resident of a certain state is changing. Do you think that the Constitution ought to change what it defines as being a resident, make it a little bit clearer so they don't put people like you in that position where you're having to make a call?
Well, first off, there's a really good policy debate, I think, that should happen, but whether or not there should be residency requirements. But I want to continue to push back. It's actually not as unclear as you're suggesting. The law actually is quite clear. The court pointed out that Mr. Kristof, during the time that he was away from Oregon, I think from the late 70s through 1999, he was traveling abroad. He maintained an Oregon driver's license. He continued to be registered to vote in Oregon, no problem. It was when he then chose to go register to vote in New York, have a driver's license in New York, center his political life, and basically say, this is the community where I want to have a say in political issues. That was really the issue. If he had continued to travel but maintain his Oregon residency through primarily voter registration, although that's not the single issue, but it's kind of the most powerful, he would not have had a problem. So it's actually easy for military members. We send out UOCAVA ballots before other ballots, folks who experience houselessness. If people are, don't have a permanent fixed, home that they own in Oregon, they are still able to vote and have accessibility here in Oregon. So if someone's remotely working, but they continue to maintain their Oregon registration, there's no problem.
Did you feel pressure from groups, regardless of how you ruled? There is a sentiment out there that you were getting pressured. And like you said, you've had pressure from both sides, supporters and non-supporters. But what did that feel like? How did that affect you? If you could, go into that a little bit.
And it has not been a picnic the last couple of weeks.
This
is what I signed up for. I signed up for being in the public eye and having the decisions that I make scrutinized. And so I accept that. But you're absolutely right. Let's be very, very clear what's been happening regarding these three initiative petitions for campaign finance reform. I have been under intense political pressure to give special treatment because these measures are popular. And I want to, again, be clear. One of the petitioners is a consistent donor of mine, giving me several thousand dollars. So I've been pressured to give special treatment, to selectively enforce the Constitution and overlook the fact that these sophisticated attorneys just messed up and didn't include the full text as the Constitution has required for over 100 years. And they did it so late in the process that they didn't have time to go back, fix it, and gather those 1,000 signatures. If they had brought this measure forward a couple of months ago, they would have been like, oh, boom, no problem. But they decided to file late. And then they're asking for special treatment. And I get it. Even folks like me who want to see campaign finance reform might say, yes, this time selectively apply the law, let these go through. But I want to ask Oregonians, is that really what you want in a Secretary of State? Do you really want a Secretary of State who's going to impose my personal opinion and selectively apply the Constitution when I like the measures or when I have a relationship with the petitioner, but apply the Constitution fairly when I don't? And I'm confident Oregonians don't want that. Hank, when I ran for Secretary of State as a progressive Democrat, people asked me, how can we trust that you're going to apply the law fairly? And I said, look, I'm a progressive Democrat, but I will lead with my values and do my job as a nonpartisan. And despite the very intense political pressure over the past few weeks, that is exactly what I've done.
Secretary of State, thanks for joining us. Come back anytime. Appreciate it.
You got it, Hank. Have a good one. And thanks for telling people to come to the Blazers game on the 27th. I'm going to be there giving the Blazers an award from the National Association of Secretaries of State. So I'll be at that game. Go Blazers. Crush those Nuggets.
Very good. Awesome. Thanks, Ben, for setting it up. Talk to you guys later. It's time now to turn to our interview with Misha Isaac, the Perkins Coie lawyer who wrote for Kristoff's side, his side of the brief. So without further ado, let's run the tape. I want to get your input on this. So obviously, as a lawyer, I know you have to remove your opinion from everything. You have to go by the book and try to figure out how to do what's best for your candidate. But person to person, now that it's over, do you think that Kristoff should be considered a resident?
Look, the advice that I gave Nicholas Kristoff when he came to me for legal advice on the meaning of the Oregon Constitution's durational residency requirement was advice that I believed to be true at the time. The arguments that I made on his behalf to the courts were arguments that I thought sincerely the court should adopt. But at the time that I made those arguments, there was no answer to the legal question under Oregon law. What was the meaning of the durational residency requirement under Article 5, Section 2 of the Oregon Constitution? As of yesterday at about 7:30 a.m., there's now an answer to that question, right? That's what the Oregon Supreme Court gets to do. They get to decide what the law is. And so your question to me, do I think that he's a resident and has been a resident of the state for the last 3 years? No, I don't. As of 7:30 yesterday, the Oregon Supreme Court says he has not been a resident of the state for 3 years, and they get the last word on that.
That's fair. I like how you think about that, where it's like, you know, they're the ones who decide. So if they don't agree with it, then that's the law. Was there?
Yeah. If I could just add one more just point on that. Like, look, I was on the losing side of this case. And as any litigator knows, you know, when you represent clients in court, you win some and you lose some. And, you know, that's tough to be on the losing side. Having said that, I mean, this case basically went exactly as it's supposed to go and should give anybody great confidence in our system. You know, Nicholas Kristoff thought that he was eligible to run for office. I thought he was too. And he announced his intention to run and started raising money and started running, filed for office, and the Secretary of State disqualified him from the ballot. Secretary of State is a partisan political elected official, as she's supposed to be. That's not a criticism of her, it's just a fact. And so Nicholas Kristoff then was entitled to seek judicial review from a neutral, fair, impartial, law committed body to make a neutral decision on his eligibility. And he got that. And so I'm very content with the way this case ended, even being on the losing side of it.
Going back to what you said about the Secretary of State being a partisan role and a partisan person, do you agree with your client's rhetoric, I should say, that the decision was made by a political power structure that's trying to keep the outsiders out and the insiders in?
You know, I don't really know how I feel about that, to be candid with you. I'm not certainly not going to sit here and criticize Secretary Fagan or her decision making right now. But I will just kind of reiterate the larger point that it is undoubtedly true that the Secretary of State is a partisan political elected official. That's the design of our system. And so it is an important structural feature of our system that her decisions get to be appealed to neutral, fair, and impartial judges. And so I do have great confidence in the fact that the system worked in the way that it should in this case. Having said that, I do have to say that my observation of how this all has unfolded, certainly in the press and public perceptions, you know, reiterate something that I'm not the first person to observe is sort of a feature of Oregon, and that's it's a little bit of a parochial place. That's a place that can sometimes be resistant to people considered to be outsiders. And I do think that there was and is a sort of class of political insiders that, for good or bad reasons, resisted the idea that Nicholas Kristoff, you know, hadn't really paid his dues, hadn't really come up through the political system in our state. And there was a sense, whether true or not, that he was just kind of showing up and anointing himself as kind of a self-appointed savior for our state. I don't agree with those sentiments, but I think that those sentiments were real. And I think that they influenced how people perceived his candidacy.
What surprised you the most during this challenge?
Well, I was surprised to lose yesterday. I thought I was going to win.
Yeah.
So that did surprise me. There were some choices that the court made, frankly, in how the court wrote its opinion that came as a surprise to me. And I'm not trying to be critical of the court's opinion. Like I said, I think that I have great respect for our justices of the Oregon Supreme Court. I know them all and know them to be people of great integrity, honesty, and intellect. And they made a good decision yesterday. But like, for example, they showed considerable deference to the decision-making of the Secretary of State. So in other words, the court did not say yesterday that it agreed with the Secretary of State's decision that Nicholas Kristof has not been a resident of the state for the last 3 years. What they said is that the Secretary of State applied the correct legal doctrine and that the Secretary of State was within her discretion to interpret the facts in the way she did. I was a little bit concerned to read that and to know that the court was not eager to exercise its own judgment on those questions.
So for like a layman, just to jump in here real quick. So like for a layman listener, somebody that doesn't understand all the legalese. So it's more common when something like, correct me if I'm wrong, is it more common when something like this happens and it goes up to the Supreme Court that they'll maybe acknowledge the initial hearing or the initial stance by somebody like the Secretary of State, but then go on further and then say, but here's why we actually made the decision that we made X, Y, and Z. Is that what I'm hearing? Because right now it seems a little bit like tomato, tomato, like they didn't come to the conclusion, but they agreed with everything that Secretary of State said.
No, they didn't agree with the Secretary of State. The Oregon Supreme Court said yesterday was, we're not going to get into sort of the second guessing set of questions about whether the Secretary of State weighed those conflicting facts correctly. All we're going to say is, she got the legal standard correct. And we think there was enough evidence in the record that the conclusion she came to was a permissible conclusion. So let me just give you another example, which might tug at your intuitions in a slightly different direction. Imagine we're not talking about Nicholas Kristof. Imagine we're talking about somebody like, for instance, a college student. And we're not talking about running for office. We're talking about registering to vote. Right? And we're not talking about Shamia Fagan, we're talking about a county clerk. College student shows up at the county clerk's office with a voter registration form and says, I'm here to register to vote. And the county clerk says, well, I'm not so sure you're a resident. I'm not so sure you're eligible to vote. County clerk asks them, well, where did you vote in the most recent election? And the college student says, well, until this year, you know, I lived in California. Okay. Well, how can you say you're registered to vote here in Oregon? Well, college student says, I live here. I go to college here. I lie my head on the pillow here every night. County clerk says, voter registration rejected. I say, you're not a resident of Oregon. You're not domiciled here. Now the question becomes, how does the voter registrant, in that case, the college student, get judicial review of that decision? And I have a real concern based on the Supreme Court's decision yesterday that it would be, at least through a mandamus proceeding, very difficult for any court to second guess a decision of a county clerk that would reject a voter registration of a college student or, you know, the many other scenarios of people who have kind of indeterminate residences.
Well, I just skip all that. I just vote in multiple states. That works for me.
Yeah, you could do that too. It may or may not be a felony, but, you know. I'm not here to give you legal advice.
Fair enough. Misha, thanks so much for your time. Talk to you later.
Yeah, good to see you. Take care.
Bye. Well, folks, that's our show. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Be sure to check out Tess Risky's cover story all about magic mushrooms. Fantastic stuff. More on that topic next week. Till then, stay safe, have fun, keep reading. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. We'll see you Saturday. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week. For more information on this podcast or the biggest stories in Portland, go to wweek.com and follow Willamette Week on all socials. We're doing some really cool things related to the podcast on our Instagram and Twitter. It includes giveaways, behind the scenes, etc. A lot of cool things coming your way, so give those a follow. Special thanks to our guests for joining us, and thank you to Aaron Mesh, Mark Zussman, and Brian Panganiban, as well as the entire Willamette Week family. Last but not least, thank you so much to Heather Witte and AmpMusic.co for the music that you hear on this podcast. For Willamette Week, I'm Hank Sanders. This has been the Dive Podcast.